This is a Sound Rebel podcast.
To work with us on your podcast, go to soundrebel.co.uk.
I focus a lot on science as well, because when I was in my other job, I found that that was something that really made a difference for the types of people that we were working with. I mean, I still do now. We have doctors, psychologists, counsellors, and unfortunately, a lot of them don't even know the science of what alcohol does to their brains and their bodies. Or if they do, they weren't ready to hear it at the time. That's another thing. But educating people on the science is the number one thing that I find that takes the shame element away.
This week's guest on Over the Influence is Sarah Connolly. Now, if you're thinking, I've heard that voice before, that name sounds familiar, rewind, go back through the OTI archives. Sarah last joined us on the podcast in the summer of 2022. So 2.5, 3 years later, we're having a fantastic catch-up. Sarah is based in Brisbane, in Australia. She's chatting to us in the actual dead of night for her, and for that, we are incredibly grateful. We talk about dandelions, we talk about orchids, and we talk about everything in between. I'll stop talking, and let's get into this week's episode.
Over the Influence is no longer just a podcast. Our online community is buzzing with people like you.
Hi, I'm Laura from North Wales. I've been sober curious for a few years, as my drinking was creeping in more and more and just becoming too much of a bad habit. I'd tried to moderate, but that just seemed to cause too much stress, so I decided to take a break. I found the OTI podcast in my first week and I loved it. Ben and Shaz just seemed so normal and down to earth, and had fun with the guests and sang about the joys of sobriety, that I just thought I'd really give alcohol-free life a proper go. So I binged the back catalogue in the first 3 months, and then I bravely took the plunge and joined the community, which was a bit nerve-wracking, but it definitely was the best thing I've ever done. The community is really supportive and welcoming, and the Zooms are a total game changer, and it's just nice making new friendships with like-minded people. It's definitely worth its weight in gold. I'm now nearly 8 months alcohol-free, and I can honestly say I don't think I'd have got this far without OTI. So if you're sober curious or thinking about going alcohol-free, I'd highly recommend giving OTI a go, because you've got nothing to lose and everything to gain. So just give it a try.
You've heard the podcast. Now join the conversation. Go to overtheinfluence.co.uk.
Welcome to this week's episode of Over the Influence. It's fabulous to have you listening. If you have maybe just discovered us for the first time and you're thinking, who's this northern voice? Well, we'll give you a quick introduction as to who we are. My name is Sharon Hartley. I live in Lancashire in the northwest of England. This year, I will be 7 years alcohol-free. Not till September, but I don't really count days anymore until there's like a big significant day and I'll go, oh, crikey, here we are, still doing it. I'm 51 years old. I stopped drinking when I was 44, although at the time I wasn't planning on stopping drinking because I thought that'd be crap and I was just going to take a break. And here we are still banging on about it, living my best alcohol-free life. I drank too much, too quickly and far too often. And yeah, it's just the best thing I've absolutely ever done, like genuinely. Don't do this on my own. Ben Anderson, how are you?
Hi, fine, thanks. Well, I say fine. We'll come back to that in a sec. I'm Ben, I'm 36, I live in Liverpool, alcohol-free. It'll be 5 years in July this year.
Amazing.
Didn't ever intend to do it. You know, I was just going to do 3 months, but I got to three and went, oh, this is good. I'll try six, see how I feel then. Got to six and thought, let's do a year. It'd be really cool to say I had a whole year off alcohol, intending to go back. But then I got to day 366 and went, this is a good choice for me. We feel dreadful, don't we, just coming back
like
to that?
Really bad.
We feel
really bad.
Absolutely dreadful. Admin Ange does all the Zoom times now for the community.
Me
and Chaz
her?
Used to.
No, we're not blaming.
I'm just, what I'm saying is that we don't have our head in time zones like we used to, because you used to be, like, you know, you go into an office and you see all the different clocks on the wall. We've got different cities around the world.
In the movies, you're not in this office, not in this recording.
That used to be
hall.
Like me and Chaz in our heads, because we were doing all the Zoom times for the community and we were like, right, okay, so if that starts at 9 a.m. UK time GMT, and that means in Australia, and we do it all ourselves. we don't do that anymore. Admin Ange does all of that. Yeah. We can't believe that we've asked Sarah to record a podcast at 3 a.m. Brisbane time.
This is awful.
I feel absolutely dreadful.
We put our head in our hands. We're like, oh my God, what time?
Dreadful. Sarah, welcome to Over the Influence. Again, welcome back to Over the Influence. It's 3 a.m. in Brisbane.
It's 3 a.m. Wow. But when you don't drink, doesn't matter. You got a clear head any time of the day.
It's just, well, first of all, thank you. Thank you.
Sarah. It's lovely to see you.
Well, thank you for having me.
Oh, you're more than welcome. I think I might have said it in the email. We're so restricted as to when we can record, because both myself and Ben, we've got families, we've got full-time jobs and our...
I've got a baby now since we last spoke, Sarah.
Oh, congratulations.
Yeah. Thank you. Yeah.
there's a lot going on. So our regular recording slot, 97% of the time, it's 6 p.m. in the UK on a Tuesday without fail. And you said, yeah, that's great with me. Absolutely not a problem. I didn't even think to say, Sarah, what time would it be? You know, at the other side of the world, 3 a.m. You look incredible. But how are you doing this? Tell us.
Well, I get up at 5 most days anyway, so it's not actually too bad. It's only a couple of hours earlier and I'll get straight into my day. But I do love a nap. So I will have a nap at lunchtime.
Well, thank you. Thank you. Oh, right. If you're thinking, who is it? I recognise this voice. Sarah Connolly, based in Brisbane, in Australia, at 3 o'clock in the morning, has been on the podcast before and had a quick search back, Sarah, and it was summer 2022. So we're talking nearly three years ago. How's life been since we last chatted?
It's been incredible. I've had a most extraordinary last 3 years. And I think the thing that really stands out for me the most in that time is just how much more you grow the longer you stay alcohol-free. And there's been some huge shifts, some changes in direction, and I'm now doing my own coaching programs and absolutely loving life most of the time. Not all of the time, most of the time. And I've just been really, really busy enjoying the work, enjoying my kids, and really, really loving life.
So you're 5.5 years alcohol-free now, and I think it's going to be really interesting in this episode talking about longer-term sobriety, because obviously when people start out doing this and it's like, right, I'm going to take a break from booze, that's what I did. That's what Ben did. That's what our community members, you know, join OTI and intend on doing, which is absolutely fantastic. And we always say, get to 100 days and then see what happens, and then go for 6 months and then go for a year. And I think sometimes the thought of even looking beyond that first weekend or over a year, it can be mind-boggling, can't it? But as you're probably going to share through the course of this episode, I've still yet to meet one single person in longer term sobriety that has, you know, yet to say, well, that was awful, I'm going to go back to drinking. Because, and sorry for using this word, it is a journey, isn't it? It is a process. And the longer you go, the better it gets.
Yeah. I struggle with that word too, but there really isn't any other word for it. It is a journey, right? And I think you've hit a really important point, because when people, I myself decided to stop for 2 weeks initially, and even that was incredibly daunting, because at that stage I was actually drinking every day, and so I didn't know if I could actually survive 2 weeks without it. And then I actually went into an inpatient rehab, because my drinking had really gone downhill very quickly after my father passed away, and so I realized very quickly that I couldn't do it on my own. I'd tried in the past and I'd failed multiple times. And so I did the 2 weeks, and I did what I think you both did, which was like, oh, I've done 2 weeks, I'll do 3 months. And then after 3 months, I'll do another three, etc. But what I do find with people that are very early on or who are just in that decision stage, the idea that they can never drink again is absolutely petrifying. And it really holds people back. So I think the key point in this, and for me and for you guys too, is that staging it and seeing how it goes is the best approach, as opposed to saying I'm not ever drinking again, or even I'm not going to drink for 6 months. I think a staged approach is so much less stressful. And if we're stressed out, we want to drink. So you've got to minimize the stress and just take it in small chunks. And that's really what I did until, like you, Ben, I got to a year and I was like, what's the point? I've worked, I've done so much, so come so far. I love feeling this way and I'll just keep going.
It's amazing. We were talking before we started recording, as we often do, you know, a bit of a kind of chip. Let me go, inevitably, let's stop talking. Save it for the episode. But we were talking and you were saying, you know, oh, it's great that you guys are still doing this. Can you believe that we're all still doing this? You know, because it's 2.5 years since we spoke. We're still doing this with as much passion, because I get your emails every single week, oh. Sarah, from the first time that we spoke. I signed up to your mailing list. And I don't do this with every guest, I must say. But I get your emails every week. And what shines through is that you are just as excited about this. You are just as passionate about this as you were, you know, after that first year.
Yeah, I think some of us just find our calling. And I think when you find your calling, it is exciting. And I think the thing that really motivates me so much is I still very much remember how I used to feel when I was drinking. Like the misery of it, I was pretty miserable, quite frankly. And I remember how painful it was, and I remember how bad I felt about myself. And so when I meet new people and when I'm doing my work, I'm just so excited because I can see what's possible. I know what's possible for them. And when you see the light, sort of like the light goes back on in their eyes, and that's when it gets, you know, so rewarding. And I think another thing that's I'm very honest about with my clients is it's easy for me to stay alcohol free because I talk about it every day. I have made it my job. So if I drink, I got a lot to lose. Whereas for those guys, people out in their normal lives, it's very different. You know, they're not talking about it all the time. They're not immersed in the whole culture of being alcohol free. And so I do think that for many of us, and I'll just speak for myself, perhaps if I didn't do this all the time, maybe I would have got sucked back in. I don't know. But I did what needed to be done. And this is what I do. And now hopefully help quite a few other people to do the same thing.
You know what, it's exactly the same for us, isn't it, Ben, and for Over the Influence. Like when I took that, what I thought was going to be this hideously boring, crappy break from booze for 90 days. You know, I was miserable. I was angry. I stayed at home. I thought, oh, this is crap. But obviously things began to change. But had you told me then that you're going to launch this podcast and you and Ben are going to be talking to thousands of people across the world week in, week out. I mean, I'm talking 52 weeks a year here, 2 episodes a week with the community, with a book, with our platform. I'd have laughed. I would not have wanted that. And yet all this stuff starts to happen organically, doesn't it? And you just get, well, you just keep going. And that's what myself and Ben do. We just keep going because, like you, we're just as passionate about it today as we were when this all started to happen. And none of it, like literally not a jot of it would have happened had we both not decided just to give it a break, just to see where it might lead.
Yeah. I do think that that's so important as well, to keep remembering that, because people forget. They do a bit of time alcohol free and they actually forget how far they've come. And then it's like, oh, you know, that classic, I wasn't that bad and I can just go back and have one or two. But there's something that I'm really conscious of in my own life, is to keep remembering I wouldn't be here now. I wouldn't have this life. I wouldn't be doing these things that I love if I hadn't made that decision 5.5 years ago. What would my life look like now if I'd kept drinking? And that is not a pretty picture.
So, do you ever stop to think that? Because I do. I sometimes think, what would it look like now, 7 years on, going at the rate I was going? And it freaks me out. I can't.
Well, yeah, but we know, don't we? We know. Like we know exactly what would happen next, don't we? Like in terms of, What you're saying is, if you had, if I'm getting this right, if you had a drink now, is that what you're saying?
No, if I'd have carried on drinking, not if I carried on drinking.
Right, sorry, I completely missed.
Yeah,
that
no, that never goes through my head. I never ever think now, what if I had a drink now? But
sometimes, just to answer that question, I know exactly what would happen if I did have a drink now, because I'm sure that I could go to the pub and have a pint, no problem.
Yeah.
But then the next day, I'd be like, oh, let's have a, you know, it would just slide back so quick that even after 5 years, you know, it'd be so quick.
Yeah,
people have told us that time and time again, haven't they? Sorry.
No. I was saying, like, had I carried on drinking at the rate I was at the age of 44, what would the start of my 50s have looked like? Two words, probably shit show. So. Mm.
Yeah, me too. 100%. It's frightening when I think about that, actually. I think it's quite a powerful exercise to do sometimes, just to keep reminding ourselves.
Not too often. I don't like it.
No, it's not a fun exercise. Let's face it, is it? But I do think about that. And I do talk about that with my clients. Like, imagine where you'll be 10 years from now if you keep drinking how you're drinking. Because it generally is not going to be something to look forward to. Because it gets worse, right? The longer we do it.
So what's really ramped up for you then in the last few years since we last spoke then, Sarah?
Well, I did 3 years working for an organisation as a coach, an organisation based out of the US. And then in June of last year, I moved into my own business, which wasn't the goal like you guys. Like, I didn't quit drinking and say, oh, I'm going to go out and help people and I'm going to, you know, write blogs and this, that and the other. But it was just a very organic, slow process, and it involved a lot of patience because I'm usually in a rush to get things done. And I decided for once in my life I was actually going to take my time. It just feels like I had to wait till I was ready to really take this on my own. And now I have some incredible groups of small groups. I work generally with small groups and with individuals on initially taking a pause from alcohol.
A power pause.
From your emails. Yes. Like a power nap. It's like a power pause. And then they can, if they want to keep going, they have options to keep going. And then I have a membership group of people that are over a year. And we work more on spiritual growth, and we do book studies and, you know, the really juicy stuff that you get into once you've moved past the basics of quitting alcohol. And I think this is where it becomes, for me, the passion for what I do really becomes around not giving up alcohol. That's just the gateway to an extraordinary personal growth journey.
Yeah. Okay, can we talk about why the pause then? Why the power pause? There's a 30-day power pause, isn't there?
Yeah.
Is the brand.
Yes.
And why the psychology of that then? Because I just really like how you said that then, is that you take the pause and then for the people that want to carry on. But why did you brand it like that?
I gave it a lot of thought. The original program I was working with was 90 days. And we were working with people that were really at that pointy end of substance use disorder. And I felt for me that the type of people that I'm best to work with are what we call the grey area drinkers. You know, the ones that are in that awful middle ground where it's not quite bad enough, but it's causing problems for them. And 90 days is very daunting for people. So the 30 days, and it's interesting, I get a mix of people, I'm sure like you guys do. I get people that come in and say, I just want a break. I just want to do a 30-day break. They come in and then some of them want to keep going and some of them are like, right, I've done that. I'm going to go back and get on with my life. So for me, it was a non-confronting introduction to the lifestyle just for 30 days. And I can brainwash them in 30 days just about to get them to want to just keep going. So the 30-day pause is really for the busy people like all of us. They don't have time to take 2 weeks and go into a rehab, not that they would need to, but they have the opportunity to have a small community, very personal attention, which is what I love. I don't like the idea of having thousands of people. and really tapping into what it is that's going to make it long term, if that's what they want.
Just on the 30 day thing, because was it with Hayden, who's based over in New Zealand? We were talking about it. He said, oh yeah, for me, you guys, Over the Influence made going alcohol free palatable, I think was the phrase he used. And what he meant by that was, like, you know, actually, you know, it doesn't all have to be like really serious. You know, we look to the future. We don't have to look back and like think about, you know, the shame we feel or the mistakes we made. We can look forward to the person, you know, just that kind of lightheartedness. And almost that's the same thing that you're doing, isn't it? Is you kind of like just coaxing people in, just going like, look, you don't have to, don't stress about this. It doesn't have to be forever. Just come and give this thing a try, and then you might like it. And if you don't, that's fine. But if you do, you can carry on. But it's that same thing, isn't it? It's just kind of like, at this point, you just kind of want to get people through the doors, don't you? You want to get people through to go, look, try this. And the easier that you can make that for people, I think it's got to be a good thing, right?
Yeah, I definitely think that's a big part of it. And I do think that 30 days is enough for people to experiment and explore what might be possible moving forward. But like you say, it's non-confrontational. It's not, you're really naughty and you've got to stop drinking and we're all terrible people. I focus a lot on the science as well, because when I was in my other job, I found that was something that really made a difference for the types of people that we were working with. I mean, I still do now. We have doctors, psychologists, counsellors, and unfortunately, a lot of them don't even know the science of what alcohol does to their brains and their bodies. Or if they do, they weren't ready to hear it at the time. That's another thing. But educating people on the science is the number one thing that I find that takes the shame element away. Because when you really understand what it does, how are we supposed to responsibly consume an addictive substance? It's like it's a complete oxymoron. So we talk about that, and then we work also on the psychology, the spirituality and everything else. But 30 days is enough. And
you know what they say, like, I've got to say it, because I've been on record on this podcast before saying things like, oh, dry January, 30 days isn't enough to really get the true benefits, in my opinion. Like, I really hope a lot of people carry on with you just for that bit, because I found a few months in is where it started to ease a bit for me. You know, it wasn't that kind of like constant thinking about it. I really hope a good percentage of people do carry on with you, because I think you're right. You know, it's great to give people that taste and that, you know, that try. And it's, especially if people have been like daily drinkers, 30 days, it's a huge achievement, massive achievement.
Yeah.
But, you know, I really hope a good few people carry on, because I really do find it's like pushing through that bit longer. I've got to say it, just because I have been on record saying that about things like Dry January or Sober October, or it's Dry July over there where you are, isn't it, Sarah?
What was that accent, Ben? What did you just say?
It's terrible. I'm not going to do it again. Just to clarify, Sarah is English, but living in Australia, not an Australian native, so I feel less bad.
Oh, that's okay then. That's all right.
I feel
then.
Less bad.
It's about as good as my Australian accent, and I've been here 25 years, so...
But do you know what I mean? I like, do people, like, is there a good amount of people that are kind of carrying on? I really hope there is.
It's about 80%.
Amazing.
Which is wonderful. And I couldn't agree more that 30 days isn't enough. And one of the biggest problems that people have in that first year is that they expect too much too soon. Especially with the noise out there, you know, we're all leaping about saying how amazing this alcohol-free life is, but the reality is very different. And I think anyone that says it's easy, you know, that's a marketing spin. It's not easy, but if we want easy, then we wouldn't be even contemplating taking time off drinking. So if people are prepared, again, the word patience comes up. Patience, compassion, and courage are probably the three things that you need in that first year. And also faith, you know, not in the spirit, religious sense, but just faith that it will be worth it. And you've got to be prepared to walk through the fire to get out the other side. That's the part where I believe people really need guidance. They need to be able to trust themselves, because the environment does not support not drinking. The environment out there is all about it. So if you're not in an environment with people where you can talk about quitting and feeling confident and talking about the benefits on a regular basis, the chances are the environment's going to suck you back in and you'll be back where you started.
And that's why community, in whatever shape or form that looks like to you, it's so vital, so vital. You know, using OTI as an example, we've got people in our community that maybe in their first week have taken a break from alcohol in years. And then they might jump on a Zoom call and there's a community member on there that has been sober for 10 years. And then you've got everything in between. And how often, Ben, do we hear people saying, oh, God, you lot, I'm going to have to believe you. Yeah, I'm just going to have to believe what you're telling me, because it's near on impossible, isn't it? When you're in those early days, in those early stages, I could never have imagined. What is this witchcraft? People not drinking for 6 months. How the hell do you do that? Not only how do you do it, why on earth would you want to? But if you're surrounding yourself with people that have trodden the path already or a little bit further ahead, and they're going, actually, you know what? What they're saying is right. Just keep going. Just keep going. It matters so much, doesn't it?
Absolutely. And I think that we've got to be realistic about it. You know, life as a drinker is pretty unpleasant a lot of the time. And it doesn't mean that life without drinking is going to be pleasant all the time. So you choose your hard, if you like. I know that's a bit of a cliche, but you choose your hard. Do you want the hard of a life of drinking, or do you want the hard of a life of personal growth? That's kind of how I see it.
Yeah, it's a bit of a no-brainer, isn't it?
Do you want the hard of a life, you know, doing great work but for someone else, or do you want the hard of a life going out, you know, striking out and doing it on your own, Sarah, and going, oh, it's all on me now?
Right.
I mean, because that is a massive one, isn't it, in terms of, you know, linking both of our stories. It is doing this stuff and continuing to do it, that's tricky at times, isn't it?
It is, and I think, you know, we'd be lying if we said we leapt out of bed every day and we're excited to talk about, because often we're talking about the same things, right? We're talking about those early days. And sometimes, you know, I do get a little bit frustrated, because, you know, I want people to just get it. You know, I want to find the one thing that I can say. It's like my life mission. I want to find that one thing that I can say, that where the penny drops, if I find it, I'll be a multi-millionaire.
Well, but we'll share it with us, because we're also...
No.
I know exactly what you mean. That's also my obsession. You know, what is that? Because that kind of... We've seen it happen time and time again. It is as quick sometimes as a switch flicking.
Yeah.
You know, that moment in someone's brain, it is just that... It can be that quick, and really everything can change in a moment. I didn't think that before until we started doing OTI and the Zoom calls and everything else. But now I really truly believe that everything can change in a moment. Sorry, Sarah, you want to jump in?
No, I was just going to ask a question, because with me, I agree, I see it happen. Do you find that it happens with different things? Like, it's like one person will get one thing and go, boom, wow, that totally landed for me. And other people are just looking like, yeah, no, I don't get it. So do you find that it's different things, or do you see a theme with that?
Well, I'll go first, Chaz, if you don't mind, because it might be different for you. I think for me, it's often different topics. Like, there's different conversations that you're having, but it's the moment that people realise that actually you can just think in a different way. Like, you can just decide to go, actually, I am going to think about the positives rather than constantly banging on about the negatives. I am going to prioritize thinking about where I could go rather than where I have been stuck. Like, I think that's what it is for me. It's almost that kind of that moment that people realize that actually, you know, it's my brain, you know, and yes, okay, it might talk to me and it might say things, not in a kind of like many voices kind of way, but, you know, that voice we all have inside our head, that little voice, for example, for me going, oh, you're drinking too much here, mate. You need to wind this in a little bit. But the moment you realise that it's yours and that you can go, hang on a sec, no, this is how it's going to be, voice in my head. Do you know what I mean? It's that kind of empowerment moment, I think.
Yeah, I love that. I love that description of it. No, it makes perfect sense to me.
What do you think, Shaz?
Oh, I've seen it happen in a million different ways with a million different people. I don't think there's any set formula or any set time frame exactly. Although, you know, within our community, Sarah, what we say to people, if you've done a 30-day break, absolutely brilliant. You're on the right path. Just go a bit longer. And then when we see people hitting triple figures, you start to see the lights come back on. You start to see people growing in confidence. You know, you start, what makes me howl laughing, and it is so brilliant, and this isn't laughing at people, it's because I did this myself and I just find it wonderful. You know, in those early days, and it's like, you've got to do something different. You've got to fill that gap. You've got to fill that gap where you were drinking. And somebody will say, oh God, I went to this art class last night. I've started doing dance lessons. I can't believe this, but I've put my trainers back on and I've joined the tennis club. Whatever it is, it's these little glimmers and it's these little wins that you start to see like rack up. And then before you know it, somebody's got 60 days under the belt or something like that. And it's, I think, as Ben said, it's people knowing that it's within their power, you know. And again, we should always say this, you know, if you are drinking to a level where you are, you know, in need of medical supervision, go and see your GP. It, you know, for some people, you can't simply just stop drinking. That's not safe to do that. If you can safely stop drinking and the lights begin to come back on behind your eyes, it's that moment when people realise, flipping heck, I do have the power. It is really all within me. And it's when you start to see that growth and that confidence that is, you know, we say it's life-changing.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. I think a huge part of it is finding other things that you really enjoy to, because you have more time, right? When you stop, you got all this time on your hands.
Oh, hell yeah. Weekend double.
And that can be, you know, people will say to me, but I'm bored. I'm like, great, be bored. Enjoy being bored, or find other things that you forgot about that you love to do, like art classes and learning a language and ice skating or whatever. Find other things that you love that give you a sense of purpose and pleasure and feeling good about yourself again. And that is what feeds into that ability to keep going. I have a lot of clients that really get into fitness, I'm sure, like you guys do. Yeah. In your groups, fitness is a big thing. Finding things that they want to do that they can't do if they're drinking. You can't get up at 5 a.m. and go for it. Well, you probably could, but be really.
You can't get up at 3 a.m. and Zoom, Sarah.
Right.
Podcast.
A live example. I've replaced drinking with 3 a.m. podcasts. But yeah, that's part of the exploring and experimenting, and you start to feel alive again, and you kind of reconnect with the child inside you and get playful and curious. And those things are very hard to do, I think, if you're not in a community of other people doing the same things.
I remembered why I was so excited about getting you on again, Sarah, because I feel like our philosophies align. Like we've got a very similar view on all of this. And it is that, like what you were just saying then, I think that the switch flickers that I was talking about, they're the people that kind of get through to that year. But the long-termers do exactly what you've just been talking about there. The long-termers decide, I'm not just removing something. I'm starting something completely new here. I'm starting a new way to live.
It's exactly that, Ben. Isn't it? How many people say, oh my God, I feel like I've had a second shot at life?
Yes.
Yeah.
Sorry, but I interrupted you there. I got excited.
No, it's exactly that. But it's that, it's the people who do this for the long term are the people that, you know, who make that conscious decision that this is just one part of a bigger overall change, I think. You know, it's not I want to stop drinking, it's I want to be the healthiest version of me. And the no drinking is a massive, massive foundational part of that, but actually it's part of a bigger whole. It's part of a new way of doing life. You know, it's got me, the way of doing it this way that included drinking got me to here, and actually feel a bit shit, could be doing better at work, relationships could be better. Let's try a whole new way. And I think that's, for me, the long term. We're just rattling on here, aren't we? Just
we're doing a lot of rattling,
theories.
Me and you, aren't we? Yeah, we really are. We really are. But I like what you said there. I really like what you said.
Sarah, you're the guest. Back to you. What do you want to talk about? Come on. Well, you, me and Shaz are just writing the manifesto again here. We're going back.
My mind's kind of thinking about people that might be listening again, you know, those people that are in that contemplation stage or pre-contemplation where they're like, oh, you know, I'm just curious right now. And that whole idea of long-term sobriety, which when you're, I don't know about you guys, but when I first met, the first person I met who told me he was alcohol-free for a year, I nearly fell off my chair, not just because of that, what he told me probably from the two bottles of wine I'd had while he was telling me, but I just remember thinking, wow, that is beyond the realm of anything that I would ever consider. And I'm always conscious of scaring people about that kind of long-term possibility, because I think back to when I was drinking, I would just think, yeah, but that's not for me. That's not for me. So for I guess for people listening that are at that stage, then it definitely is a staged process. It's not something that you need to go into with this mindset of I'm going to stop for a year or 6 months or anything that daunting. That said, once we get you in, you won't want to leave.
They say, the amount of people that said, and Ben was one of these actually, Sarah, when Ben got to, was it about 3 months, he was like, shit, Shaz, you were right. Flipping it.
Yeah, I remember being annoyed.
Really annoyed, like, yeah, with me.
I was able to objectively see that things were getting better already, yeah. Just by by removing alcohol for 3 months. But I was really annoyed by that because I didn't want it to be we say it's not a silver bullet, but it was great for me removing alcohol in so many different ways. And I just remember being like, oh, I'm gonna have to carry on with this. Oh no. Because if I don't, then I'm definitely an idiot. If I go back to drinking after seeing this change and that improve and this happening over there, I'd just be an idiot.
I mean, it comes back to what we said before, wasn't it? Oh God, can you imagine if you'd have carried on drinking, you know, from where we were, and you as well, Sarah. But equally, can you imagine now any one of us giving up everything that has been gained over? We're talking a combined total of about 17 years of sobriety, 5.5 for you, 5 for you, Ben, coming up for 7 for me. That's a long time. If you were to write a list of everything that you would lose, that you have gained over that time, you'd put your head in your hands. You'd be like, no, why? Why would you? No, just no, not compromising that.
I've actually got a question for you both. If that's okay.
Oh.
Yes, I like it when the tables are turned. Slightly uncomfortable.
Yeah, a little bit odd, yeah. I feel a bit yeah. Swimming in my seat.
So I have a question about grief, right? Do either of you remember a moment in time where you grieved your drinking identity?
Oh, my God, that is such a massive question. That is really hard.
Well, I answered the last one first. So you've got to go first this time.
I knew you were going to do this.
This is how good Sarah is at what she does, by the way, everyone. This is how she is like the best coach. Because what do you think about this really deep thing?
Sorry, I know it's 3 a.m. for me as well. So yeah, imagine what I'm great. Like early, later on in the day.
Oh, not a chance. I couldn't cope with it. I couldn't have been bits. I'd be like, I can't do it. Sarah, I can't do it. For me, it would have been in like the first 3 to 6 months-ish. Yeah. And for me, it was realising that my choices were being judged by other people and that the party animal and the extrovert that I thought I was dropped like a hot potato. Not going to get into it all. And then it was a realisation after that that, oh God, I'm, yeah, don't get me wrong, I'm a broadcaster, so I've got a big mouth. You know I am actually like quite loud and out there, but not the complete drunken dick that I used to think that I was, that I was this mad party animal, extrovert, first on the dance floor, first to spew up to make room for more alcohol, first one to pass out, you know, first one to just make an absolute tit of myself. And when it shifted from realizing I wasn't who I thought I was and I like this version so much more, then that's when I started to become really comfortable with who I was. And then what really blew my mind was knowing underneath it all, God, this is deep, isn't it? This is so deep, is that this is who I always was beneath the alcohol. And that was, for me, mind-blowing. But yeah, I do remember a period of being really sad and literally, yeah, grieving for that. A bit like a cartoon character, really. You know, that was me, but actually take away the alcohol and this is it. And yeah, and in the words of The Greatest Showman, that amazing song, you know, this is me now. And I'm really quite happy with that. Sarah, thanks for that. Flipping egg. Man alive.
Well, we got to hear Ben's now.
I thought I was going to, if I stayed quiet, I thought I'd get away with that.
No.
But no, it's 3 a.m, but razor sharp. You know what? I do have moments still. Yes. Not very often, but the occasional fleeting moment. But I suppose, you know, this is the boring part of me that loves colour-coded spreadsheets and looking at the analytics in the back end of the platform we use for the, you know, the geeky part of me is that kind of bit where I objectively look down on it and go, yes, okay, I might miss that artificial high that drinking gives you in this moment. I definitely won't miss that artificially induced crash that you get the next day with the hangover. And I really do genuinely like living my life in this kind of content middle. Like, I really do. But then there are times where I'm just like, ah, you know, that artificial high, like, I don't feel involved in that moment that's happening over there, you know, because I'm not on the same level. Because I haven't had a drink, like, but very, very rarely. And it is, and it really is just a pang. And that kind of objective geeky bit goes, well, what about this, you know, it's like a not a very high powered computer kind of kicks in and goes, actually, objectively, you know, yes, you might feel like this now for the next 10 seconds, but actually for the, you know, but you are a much better person as a non-drinker. Don't forget, boom, 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 you know.
I reckon you should have an app for that.
Well, yeah.
Ben's not more sure Commodore 64, really.
Yeah. What about you? Do you ever grieve your former drinking identity, Sarah Connolly, the guest?
I did, but it was very intense. That's probably why I asked the question, because mine was a very obvious moment. And Sharon, like when you said 3 to 6 months, mine was at 4 months. I would remember it exactly.
Oh, my God.
And I'd been alcohol-free for 4 months and I was on our annual family trip with friends. And we went to a place called Moreton Island. There's nothing to do there, like literally nothing to do except go to the pub, drink, play bowls, go to the beach. And everybody was drinking, everybody that was there apart from the kids. And I was fine for a little while. And I was quite happy when we got to the pub. They had a Heineken Zero back in the day. and I had a couple of those. And then we went back to the house. And I remember, like, really, it was an intense moment where I realized that I could decide to go back. I wanted to go back. I wanted to fit in. I wanted to be part of it. And I wanted the familiarity and the comfort that came with that drinking life. But I knew I couldn't and I didn't want to, but I didn't know where else to go. So I was looking back and then I looked forward and I didn't know what it was going to look like. And I actually, and this is the truth, I actually, it's I'm quite an intense person, if you haven't guessed, but I actually got down on my knees and I cried and I cried and I cried, because it was that moment where I decided I'm going to go forwards. I don't know what it looks like. I'm absolutely terrified, and I'm letting go of that old identity. And the crying was actually, as you probably would know, your crying is quite cathartic. And once I'd got it out of my system, I was ready to move forward.
You've just reminded Amazing. Me of an exact similar thing that happened to me. And this was a couple of years ago. So bear in mind, at this point, I would have been, 4 or 5 years alcohol free. So really confident in sobriety, happy to be not drinking. You know, it's none of this, oh, what a shame, Sharon can't drink. No, it's not a shame. I'm choosing not to. It's absolutely fine. And I left an event and was driving home, and I just burst into tears, like literally just burst into tears in the car. And my husband said, you know, what's up? I thought you'd had a good night. And I'm like, it's too complicated. It doesn't matter. It really doesn't matter. And I just said, it was a mixture of, I think, as you were talking about, you know, mourning this past, you know, of the person I was, but equally being really relieved as well that I was sort of still doing it. And it was weird. It bit me on the arse. It sort of came from nowhere and I didn't expect it. But again, it was another of those moments. God, this is a deep episode. So
well,
but
the last one was.
This.
Do you remember the last one? Because wasn't the last one when we were talking about highly sensitive people?
Yeah, well, we were talking about orchids and dandelions, weren't we?
It always gets deep, Sarah. Oh, we've got to talk about orchids and dandelions, because this has really stuck with you, Shaz.
And you know why it stuck with me, Sarah? And I realise we've got about 5 minutes left. When you started talking about it on the last episode, and if you want to know what we're on about, go back to about August 2022, something like that. You'll find Sarah's first episode. And when I hit 1 year alcohol free, my daughter had given me an orchid. And it's still alive, right? It's in the kitchen. It's looking a bit ropey, but it's still that I still have this flipping orchid, and it is now coming up for 6 years old, because she gave it me when it was my day 365. And I was like, it just blew me away. And when I hit 5 years alcohol free, I don't know if Ben had you forgotten my birthday or something or other. And he's like, Ben made a really big deal of it. He was wonderful. He's like, Shaz, I've got you a gift for your 5 years. And I think you wrote me a birthday card and crossed out happy birthday and put like happy 5 years in it or something like that. Because you cocked up on the
Sounds
card
like,
or
yes.
something. It was something you do. And Ben also got me an orchid, not knowing that Ella had got me one. And so they mean the world to me, these plants. They really do. So, Sarah, tell us about your orchid theory and just remind people what it was all about when you last spoke to us.
All right, I'll try and do it in under 2 minutes. When I stopped drinking, I realised that I was super sensitive to loud noise, to bright lights, and I realised a lot of my drinking was about trying to kind of dull my senses to actually cope in a lot of the environments that I was going in. And I discovered the idea of highly sensitive people, which comes from a lady called Dr. Elaine Aron. So I did my reading, and another research scientist had written an article called Orchids and Dandelions, and I read it and I was like, this is exactly how I feel. The idea is that about 80% of the population are dandelions. They are very hardy. They thrive in any environment. They can just get, you know, they get over stuff. They get stuff done. They're not super sensitive. And then 20% of the population are orchids. That's the highly sensitive person. And it doesn't mean that we're highly sensitive in that we're crying all the time, or that you can't say a bad word and, you know, we'll fall to pieces. It means that we are sensory, high sensory processing. So bright lights, loud noises, big groups of people, lots of pressure, lots of stress. We really struggle because we're a lot more sensitive in that regard. And so the concept is dandelions are very hardy and they can grow in any environment. But for orchids, we actually need a very specific type of care. And we have to be very conscious of nurturing ourselves if we want to flourish into our orchid nature. And so that's about it in a nutshell.
Very impressively done there. With under 2 minutes, I think. Nailed the brief. Well done, Sarah. But go back and listen to that episode, because it really is. You know, just type in Over the Influence, Sarah Connolly. Just search for it in the main search bar on your podcast app, and it should take you straight back, rather than scrolling back through what is now hundreds of episodes to get back to the last time we chatted to Sarah. But it's well worth it, because it was a great chat. Really thoroughly enjoyed that. And, of course, this one, too.
Well, I think
we've come to end now, Shaz, haven't we?
Yeah. Yeah.
Sorry, Sarah.
One last thing I would love to say about it is that when you do remove alcohol, and you have to do it for longer than 30 days, that let's be clear, you do have the opportunity to really find out what does nourish you, and you have the opportunity to set boundaries, and you have the opportunity to make more discerning choices about the environments that you put yourself in. And as you do that, you really do flourish, because I don't know about you, Sharon, but I was trying to be a dandelion, and then once I realized I wasn't a dandelion, I had to put all the things in place to really support myself being an orchid. And I think that's been one of the most self-affirming, rewarding things that has ever happened in my life. So
I'm with you. I never thought I could be a delicate orchid, yet here we are. Here we are, Sarah.
I'll represent brilliant. The dandelions.
Yeah, here he is. Popping
just
up everywhere.
Throw me out there, throw him on a mountain in a t-shirt, blowing in the wind.
I love it. Sarah, it's been fantastic. I'm so glad that you got up in the dead of night to chat to us, and we massively appreciate that, and you, so thank you. If people want further information about what you do in Australia, where can they find that, Sarah?
Just sarahconnolly.com.au.
Amazing. Thank you for joining us on Over the Influence.
Thank you so much. It's been wonderful.